Now, more of the Tennessee Star Report with Steve Gill and Michael Patrick Leahy.
And welcome back in. This is the Tennessee Star Report with just a simple comment. In an interview, President Trump puts the 14th Amendment and illegal immigration right back at the centerpiece of this election. It is a trifecta win for him. One, it reminds people that if you want to fix immigration, illegal immigration, you better keep the Republicans in control of Congress. Two, this may be decided in the courts. President Trump has two big wins in the Supreme Court nomination process already. And if you want the courts to decide this stuff and want constitutional conservatives in the court, you better stick with Trump. It was one of the key issues that turned out his base in 2016. It reminds voters that the court matters. And third, it refocuses attention on that migrant mob, increasingly violent migrant mob, marching north through Mexico. It's a trifecta of benefit 1 week before the election. James Agresti is in with us to talk a little bit about the 14th
Amendment. And James is the president of Just Facts, a public policy think tank. He's has a bachelor's of science in mechanical engineering from Brown University, and he's the author of Rational Conclusions, a meticulously researched and acclaimed book that evidences factual support for the Bible across a broad array of academic disciplines. He wrote an article called Despite the Median-Driven Rhetoric, the Constitution's Fourth Amendment Does Not Grant Birthright Citizenship. Welcome, James.
Steve and Michael, thank you for having me on.
So my question to you, James, is how did somebody go to Brown University, the Ivy League's leftist, most left-wing institution, and that's saying something. How did somebody go to Brown University and come out rational and a conservative?
I'll tell you. I went in with some rationality. I came from a family of business people and very practical, hardworking people. And when I witnessed some of the nonsense that went on there, it made me even more strident in my views.
What are your college reunions like?
Pretty interesting. We all get along fine. Everybody pretty much stays away from politics, and we just have a good time. It's not like you think it might be.
So tell us about your article and your argument about the 14th Amendment.
Sure. So to understand what the 14th Amendment means, you have to trace back to the history at the time, because the wording itself is a little bit vague. As a lot of people have been talking about, the key element of this amendment is that it says to be a citizen and you have to be born in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So that phrase, jurisdiction thereof, is critical. So to understand that, you have to understand that this amendment was enacted shortly after the Civil War. Republicans, what were called the Radical Republicans at the time. Sound familiar?
Yes.
Yeah, no question. They're calling people the same thing for essentially adhering to the exact same principles, which is that people have rights that are inherent from the Creator, and as a citizen of the U.S., they have certain privileges. And one of those privileges is the ability to vote and all the other things that come along with being a citizen of this great nation. So they said, hey, these newly freed slaves, we want to make sure that they are citizens, that no state can deprive them of citizenship and all the benefits that accrue with that, and the nation cannot. No president can come in one day or Congress and say these people are not citizens. So they enacted this 14th Amendment. And when they did so, a Republican senator by the name of Jacob Howard from Michigan proposed it in the Senate on May 30th, 1866. And this is what he said. This amendment, which I have offered, is simply declaratory of what I regard as the law of the land already, that every person born in the limits of the U.S. and subject to their jurisdiction is a citizen of the U.S. And then he added this. This is Kate. He said, this will not, of course, include persons born in the United States who are foreigners, aliens, who belong to the families of ambassadors of foreign ministers, but it will include every other class of persons. Now, the senators then discussed the meaning of this and argued about it, and they started talking about this phrase, subject to the jurisdiction. This is what Howard said, and again, this is key. He says, it implies a full and complete jurisdiction on the part of the United States. coextensive in all respects with the constitutional power of the United States. And he said, it's the same in extent and quality as applies to every citizen of the United States now. Certainly, gentlemen cannot contend that an Indian belonging to a tribe, although born within the limits of a state, is subject to this full and complete jurisdiction. He's talking about the children of people who are already citizens of the United States.
Well, and interesting, James, this is Steve Gill. By making that distinction about Native Americans, or Indians as they were called at the times, it showed that geographic birth was not what would dictate whether somebody was a citizen. You could be born on this turf, but it still didn't matter if you were not here legally and already a citizen.
Yes, and the way this amendment is being misinterpreted now, you could just be here on vacation in the United States, have a child, and now this child is eligible to vote when he or she becomes older, receive all kinds of welfare. In fact, most welfare, means-controlled welfare, means-tested welfare, is paid out based on the income of the household. So now you have a parent who's here, an illegal immigrant, is not reporting any income. They have a child, and they say, my household income is zero. Now they can get all the welfare based on their child being a citizen.
And use that as, this is the term, anchor babies, to give a basis for them, their cousins, their grandparents, and others to claim some legal status here in the country. James, how did this get so far out of whack? I mean, the clear terminology and the clear intent when it was put in place. Now, again, as we were talking in the last segment, you know, you didn't have this flood of illegals flowing in to get on social welfare in the 1860s. There wasn't any. You didn't have these people coming here to get jobs because you just had millions of slaves freed. There wasn't a glut of jobs. There was a glut of workers. So how did it get so out of whack between 1866 and about the mid-80s when our government decided to start granting this sort of benefit to people?
You know, I really have not dug into that in depth. I'm sure it's a long, convoluted process. And I just don't have enough background to talk about it with any kind of precision. So I'm going to pass on that question if you don't mind.
Well, and part of it is just the numbers. I mean, in the 80s, you had about 30,000 of these birthright citizenship births per year. Now we're looking at 275,000 and the number's growing. Kind of like when you look at this mob moving north. This one may be 15,000 people. The next one may be 50,000 people. It is a growing problem, and kudos to President Trump for being willing to address it.
James, this is Michael Patrick Leahy. So when you listen to, as I did driving in this morning, to news reports in which they are asserting that the 14th Amendment guarantees citizenship for birthrights, how do you react to that?
I scratch my head and really get a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach because it is so intellectually dishonest. A Tufts University professor by the name of Daniel Dresner wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post recently about this issue. And it was just utterly full of nonsense and avoided all the primary evidence that I just shared with you. In fact, what he did is he cherry-picked from that Senate debate various statements of senators, which is just a ridiculous way of looking at it. These senators did not propose the language that was eventually implemented. There was a lot of back and forth, and you can basically make any argument you want by just cherry-picking statements from that debate. You have to look at the words of the person who proposed it and explained it very clearly what everyone agreed to. So I sent this guy an email saying, hey, you know, hey, doctor, what you got going on here? You got an issue here with this op-ed. Not only that, you misattributed a quote to somebody who didn't say it. You mixed up the people. And the editor of the Washington Post didn't even get the courtesy of reply from any of them.
Hold it. You presented them with primary evidence, with facts that contradicted this talking point about the 14th Amendment, and you're telling me that the Washington Post editor didn't respond to you? I'm shocked, I say.
Yeah.
now I noticed the PS at the bottom of your letter, and it said, and by the way, he went to Tufts, I went to Brown, nanny, nanny, boo, boo. Do you think that had an impact on his decision?
You know, and scholars are very, some of them have very, what's the word, fragile egos. Oh, yeah, maybe.
He wanted to go to Brown. You know that. James, when you look at how this plays out, you're hearing folks like Paul Ryan say, well, I like to look at what the Constitution says. Hey, get a clue. Look at what the Constitution says, because the wording shouldn't be that confusing. But you generally in the courts don't get to, because this is going to ultimately head to the courts. The Supreme Court will ultimately make this decision of what this constitutional provision means. You don't get to interpretation and what the intent of the drafters is, unless the provision itself is confusing. When you look at laws or legislation, the courts are supposed to not look to the intent until there is a question of whether or not the language itself is confusing. Do we even get to the intent? I mean, is this language really that confusing?
I think it is. I wouldn't say it's confusing. It just needs a little bit of definition. Again, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. The people on the left are arguing, well, that just means they're subject to our laws, which is a ridiculous interpretation given, as you can see, from the context of these debates. But you can't really make that argument until you look a little deeper, and that's go that deep. This is not a complicated issue. Just look at the debate. The debate, I've read the thing from top to bottom. It's about a dozen pages. We've posted it up on our website. And you cannot read that debate and walk away and say, hey, they meant to say that anyone vacationing in the U.S. who comes here illegally is subject to the jurisdiction of our laws. No, they're subject to the authority of another nation. In fact,
James Agresti, thanks so much for joining us. Come back again, would you please?
Hey, thank you for having me, guys.
Thanks, James Agresti, president of Just Facts, a public policy think tank, and author of an article on the 14th Amendment. Back in a minute.